all you listeners to The Sprocket out there on the internet. It is good to talk to you again. This is Brock Dittus, and Brandon Rhodes is currently away, but I'm going to fill in the blanks between him and I for this special edition of The Sprocket while we are out of town. Just wanted to let you guys know, we are, of course, still very excited about this show, about the responses that we've gotten, about hearing from you, and of course, just increasing the interactivity of all of it as we go on. So keep those letters coming. Keep writing to us. Keep saying hello. I know there was a fellow who just finished a cross-country bike tour, and I believe that was... I believe it was coast to coast, and he also had done some stopping at breweries along the way, which was exciting. But yeah, he just put a comment in the last little one that we put up there, the last post, and yeah. So, anyways, thank you so much. I believe Work to Bike, I think, was his website, worktobike.com. I'll try and put a little link up to that as well. But yeah, and then of course I have forgotten to mention this. It was some time back now, but listener David and friend David, who I haven't seen in many years, he's been listening to the show, and he actually chipped a little bit more towards us on the donation button. So, David, thank you so much for passing some stuff our way, and we do appreciate that. Every little dollar helps to buy beer for our fantastic guests and underwrite some of the costs of hosting and whatnot. So, anyways, if you guys do want to share some stuff with us, our donate button is, of course, on the website at thesprocketpodcast.com. Well, Before I turn things over to our pre-recorded interview segment with Friedel from thetraveling2.com, I will give you guys some information. Of course, our contact info, just in case you want to get in touch with us, is thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. And you can call us, leave us a message if you would like to, or even send us a text, an SMS of 140 characters or less. I mean, you can send us as many texts as you want. They're free. With Google Voice, I think, is what we're using. But the phone number for that is 503-847-9774. So that's how you get in touch with us. Now, last week, Logan, our good friend Logan Smith from Rowdy Kittens, he had collected some news headlines that he was passing our way, and so I wanted to be able to share those with you. We were going to have him read those last week, but I kind of caught him off guard, so my apologies for that, Logan. But maybe I'll jump into that real quick. So without further ado... Here is that wonderful song everyone likes, the I Like My Bike from Hurt Bird. Ah, there it is.
What can compare with the thrill of a brand new bike?
I like my bike, it's fast. I like my bike, it's fast. I like my bike, it's fast. It circles around the city lights.
All right, the first thing up here that Logan sent from EcoVelo is a study about people being happier and more successful in cities that have a higher bike commuting rate. That was a link that I believe it was The Atlantic posted up, and EcoVelo caught that. So we'll put up a link to that. After that, there was the APBP.org. Anyways, it was another cycling study. I believe this had to do with women cycling. And I'll just read a quote here from the summary of the study. Cycling behavior appears to be influenced by the size of community. While women from the suburbs and rural areas were less likely to use their bicycles for daily trips, they cycled longer distances, over 60 miles, than women from other communities. Rural and suburban women also constituted the highest percentage of respondents to report always wearing a helmet. Finally, from large cities, women were more receptive to the addition of bike lanes as a means to start or increase their cycling. And as a result, interventions to increase women's cycling must take into account the areas in which women live. That was the Association of Pedestrian and Bicycle Professionals. So, thanks again to them. And then from there on, we have... something from takingthelane.com, which is written by Ellie Lou. It's written by Ellie Blue from bikeportland.org. She collates a lot of the news stories from all over. And she talks a little bit about being car-free. Interesting quote here. She says, "Instead of radical renunciation, being car-free can be about freedom. I know that families that keep one car and let it sit in the driveway nearly every day, some prefer to call themselves car light or low car, but it seems to me that what they're doing is more difficult than living without a car when you've given yourself no choice." which is actually kind of how I began my journey to car-free living, was just not using my car as much. But it does take discipline, especially on the days when it's rainy and or otherwise inconvenient for cycling or getting out there. From New York City, I believe this was from the Wall Street Journal. They talked a little bit about bicycling, and they were saying that after all the controversy and apparently the people who were pulling so hard for bicycle infrastructure, one day you'd walk down to the harbor and expect to see the Statue of Liberty sausage into tight shorts, sipping a Stumptown espresso and thumbing through Velo News. But after that, a funny thing occurred. It got warmer, more people started riding, and then the mania was eclipsed by reality. And that's the beauty of a bike, a simple machine with two wheels and zero ideology. When you can turn a pedal and feel safe, it's fun and it makes sense. But interesting talk about kind of the reality of cycling in New York City and not just the hype that's kind of grown up around it. From there, let me share with you TBD on foot. This is, I believe, a blog from Washington, D.C., and they were talking a little bit about are people who ride bikes happier? They say biking commuters would typically be a little richer, a little fitter, and perhaps, as a result of both prior factors, from as much as the biking itself, be a little happier than the rest of us. Regular bikers tend to be more aware of the social and health benefits that biking can bring, and it's as much leisure as convenience. Although the analysis falls far short of suggesting that biking to work causes those other benefits, the numbers are a positive sign for bikers. And last but not least, we've got onearth.org, Survival Guide for the Planet, and they're sharing an article about the new routes on America's bicycle highway system. On his blog, U.S. Transportation Secretary Ray LaHood writes, "I'm happy to report that the Association of American State Highway and Transportation Officials, otherwise known as ASHTO, has approved the first new routes for this system in more than 30 years. The ASHTO is working with state DOTs, Departments of Transportation, to identify good potential routes for interstate biking. The government bodies also work closely with the Adventure Cycling Association, which is awesome, my words, and which is an incredible bike advocacy organization that specializes in long-distance bike touring and recreation riding. Few, if any, groups better understand cycling as transportation, and the ACA's input helps ensure that the routes can be safe and convenient and fun as possible. Together, ASHTO and the ACA create a map of what national interstate bike route systems could look like." And it really is incredible, just the idea that you could have signed routes that would take you all over the United States. So that's kind of particularly exciting if you like going out on bicycle tours, as I do. So without any further ado, let me preface this little bit here, which is our pre-recorded interview with Friedel from traveling2.com. I was just talking to a guy I met last night, Jason, who I believe took most of his cues from getting ready for a big interstate bike trip from the things that he read on traveling2.com. So I will patch in the interview that we recorded earlier, and I sure hope you enjoy it.
Ow, for God's sake.
Sorry. You all right?
Hi, Brock.
Hello. Excuse me. I'm doing all right. Yourself?
Yeah, I'm doing well.
Excellent.
How's the sound quality today?
The sound quality is great. I'm so excited about, you know, just like being able to speak across across the lines for everything. All the way across the Atlantic, the pond, as they say.
Yeah, exactly. Technology is wonderful, huh?
Quite so, yeah. Well, hey, happy Friday. Is it still Friday with you, but it's like 9 p.m. or something?
It is. It's getting towards the end of our day. Yeah.
Okay.
But, yeah. Hey, it's the weekend. So.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thanks for making time. I know it's with the shift and the differential and everything. It's tricky. So we appreciate it. Mm-hmm. I'm Brock. This is Brandon over here.
Addy.
Hi.
Sure. Well, let's. Why don't we, Brandon? You reminded me that we haven't actually introduced you yet for the recording. So maybe we'll start there, and then we could roll right into the Amsterdam stuff.
Yep. Sounds
right.
Good.
Great. Well, we are here on the Sprocket Podcast. I'm Brock, and this is Brandon Rhodes.
Howdy.
And we are connected with Friedel Grant, who is over in the Netherlands, or Holland. I think on Facebook it's Holland, because there's like a Holland promotion going on right now. Is there a preference as far as if you are over there, what it's called?
Well, I think Technically, it's the Netherlands.
Okay.
The Netherlands would refer to the whole country, and Holland refers to actually a couple provinces. But internationally, if you leave the Netherlands, most people just say Holland. So
okay, there we go. Well, that's helpful. At least we have some clarification for the terminology. So you just told us you're not actually living in Amsterdam, which I suppose is a common misconception because you are quite famous and publicized. So everyone thinks traveling to Holland. Yeah. Amsterdam, but you're actually outside of it.
Yeah, I think Amsterdam is the first city that comes to everyone's mind when they think of the Netherlands.
Right, it's the only one I know.
And we're forever telling cyclists who come and stay with us that we're not in Amsterdam, and we've actually had a couple cycle there and only discover they've got another 50K to go. So
right. That's a nice full day, or at least half a day, depending on how much you're carrying, I suppose. But
well, it's pretty flat here, so they do have that in their favor, as long as there's no headwind.
That is nice.
Yeah, it depends which way you're going. We're on the coast, so you're either going to have this fantastic day where you're sailing along at some phenomenal speed, or you're going to be slugging out the whole way.
Like with headwinds and that sort of thing?
Yeah, it can be pretty breezy here by times.
Nice.
But it's still a fantastic place to cycle. And we live about 50K away from Amsterdam, and we live in a city called The Hague, which is the parliamentary capital of the country.
Okay, and one of two you were telling us before we began here, so it's exciting and confusing and all the rest, but yeah. So Brandon actually mentioned just before we started here, he was interested in some of the cultural lessons, just because Holland is such a it's such a starkly different experience for bicycling than it is in America. And even here in Portland, a lot of people kind of hold up Holland as like, you know, it's this golden utopia, this place where everything is perfect. I'm sure things are not perfect, but they're definitely more amenable to cyclists in general than it is in most places here in America, just because the cultural patterns are kind of ingrained a bit more from the start, I think. So what are some things you think that both that maybe America could learn, and maybe North American culture more broadly could learn from Holland? And
well, on bicycling specifically is more what I was getting at.
Yes, on bicycling, yeah. And maybe the other direction. What are some things that Holland could pick up from America, if there are some?
Yeah, good question. I mean, you were referring to it as almost a biking paradise, and I would say it's pretty close. It's almost as close as you can get, I think, to a biking paradise. Not perfect, but pretty darn nice. So everyone goes everywhere here on bicycle, and you see everything from, you know, commuters racing to work to families with four kids on the bike, and it's just a normal part of everyday life. So I think the thing that amazes me and why I think the bike culture works so well here, and that countries all over the world could learn from, is there's a real respect between the cyclists and the motorists. Because even if you're in a car, everyone in a car rides a bike, or their grandma rides a bike, so they understand the cyclist's perspective. They might be in a car for that moment, but in the afternoon, they're on their bike going to get the groceries.
Sure. So there's no dichotomy between the two. Like, it's not. I think I heard someone say one time that if you live in Holland, there are no cyclists in Holland. There's just people that sometimes are riding bikes and other times might be driving.
Yeah, it's just a normal everyday activity. It's nothing special. You don't make a big deal of saying, hey, I'm going on my bike. It's just assumed that you're going to jump on your bike and do what you have to do, because it's a convenient, easy way to get around.
Yeah.
And of course, they make it very easy for you. The bicycle infrastructure here is just incredible. There are bike paths. I wouldn't say absolutely everywhere. Sometimes you are on the road, but a good deal of the way there are bike paths and just everything you need to make it easy to cycle here.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you don't have a bike, you can rent one at the train station for about $2 a day. It's very, very cheap.
That's affordable.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think
and lots of people will do that. They won't take their bike if they're going between a couple cities, for example. They might not take their bike on the train, but they'll get to the train station at the other end and rent a bike for a couple dollars, and then they've got it for the whole day.
Mm. That's a great deal. I know there are programs like that are beginning to pop up in different cities in the U.S., but they're still very, very young in their infancy. I think Portland has been optioned for one. I think it's in the works, but it's definitely not here yet. But that would be so convenient.
Yeah, I suppose the Netherlands has helped in the fact that they have a certain population density, and obviously that helps. I'm from Canada originally, and a lot of things that happen here in the Netherlands in terms of bike culture just couldn't possibly transfer to Canada mm-hmm. because the distances are so great and you don't have the number of people to support that sort of infrastructure, unfortunately. Not to mention the cold winters.
Definitely, yeah. Which part of Canada were you from?
I'm from the East Coast originally, Nova Scotia.
Okay, that's one of the islands out there, right?
Not quite an island. Peninsula.
Oh, it's there we go. See, well, I'm from the West Coast, and so both being a dumb American and then also being on the West Coast, I'm somewhat divorced from all of those places. But they have really romantic names. I guess the image I always had was Anne of Avonlea, just because that was the stereotype, and that's the only thing you ever get connected to. But
We're not too far from that. But don't worry about it. It's a whole continent away, and it's a big continent, isn't it?
Yeah, so. Quite so. Actually, I think that there's probably more land mass in Canada than there is in the U.S., isn't there? Or it's pretty close.
It's huge, yeah. And when you're living in Holland, it never fails to amaze me to think the whole country is only 300 kilometers across. I'm speaking in kilometers. I'm not sure about miles, but it's tiny. You know, you can bike across it in 3 days maximum.
Right. Yeah, so. It's a veritable postage stamp of land mass. That's
and
good.
Despite that, I think they have something like 8,000 kilometers of bike paths, or I might be wrong in that number, but it's a phenomenal number. And I always think in a country that's only 300 kilometers across, how can that be? How can you have that many bike paths?
Seriously.
But they do.
They must be counting two lanes in the same different directions on the same road or something like that. That only counts for one.
Right. As far as maybe between the cities, because you're in The Hague and Amsterdam is not too far away, are there separate bikeways between the cities as well, or do you end up sharing some road space with people between the cities?
There are bike paths everywhere. It's like a little bike network, and you can get huge atlases that just navigate you from city to city. In fact, they actually have what I call here, if I were to translate from the Dutch, I call it cycling by numbers. Hmm. You know, when you were kid, you used to have paint by numbers, and number one was red, and you colored. It's sort of like that. So you can get these atlases, and they have numbers at the intersections of all the bike points, and those correspond to signs actually on the road. And so you can sit at home with your atlas, and you can say, oh, I'm going to go from point 1 to point 5 to point 79, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Just write down the numbers, and off you go. You don't even need a map.
That's very nice.
Wow.
Yeah, I think San Francisco here on the west coast of the U.S. has a bike system where I think they have numbered bikeways, kind of like our interstate system. You know, the highways all have numbers, so the bike routes in San Francisco That's have great. Numbers. But this is actually, you're talking about point to point where you just say, it's like a choose your own adventure book where you turn to page 75 next or something.
It's exactly like that. Now, the adventure part of it comes when occasionally a sign is obscured and you miss your turn. And that's when really fun if you didn't bring your map. So we always have a map as a backup.
That is good. It's nice to have something to fall back on.
Yeah.
Yeah. So as far as is there anything that you think Holland lacks? Is there anything that that the U.S. has better? I find it hard to imagine that there would be. But can you think of anything?
In terms of cycling infrastructure, I would say no. Mm-hmm. Of course, what we lack is space. Everywhere you go, there are people. And I remember when Andrew and I were cycling across North America, the beautiful thing about North America and the States in particular is all your national parks and protected areas and mm-hmm. how you can really just get out there and be in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
They have what they call here pole camping sites. They call them pole camping sites because there's a pole in the middle of the woods somewhere, and it's supposed to be this place where you can go wild camping. So because technically you can't just go put your tent up in the woods somewhere. It's illegal. So they've got about 40 designated spots in Holland where you can go and put your tent and wild camp, and there's nothing there. There's no toilet, no water or anything. So it's pretty rustic.
Sure.
But every time you go, you can always hear cars or you can see a nearby house. So even though they're doing their best to find these wild natural places where you can go out and be in nature for a night, it just doesn't really have the same feel to it as going out to one of the national parks in North America and really being out in the middle of nowhere. You know?
I see. So if we could slice off large portions of the West and just kind of drag them across the Atlantic, that would be the perfect situation.
Yeah. Or maybe we just have to go on vacation to the States once in a while to get that.
True enough. Well, as far as traveling to the States, you've been here and you've done a lot of bicycling here in the past. Maybe traveling2.com. It's traveling with two L's. That's the website that you and Andrew put together. And you want to tell us a little bit about that and what we could find there? And then we could maybe talk a little bit about your larger journeys.
Sure. Well, the website originally started, we only ever intended it at the beginning to be a blog for our friends and family because we were going to do a bicycle trip around the world. And we thought, like most people nowadays, you know, well, we want a place to share our photos and our journals and so on from our trip. And then we discovered as we were getting ready for the trip, we were having a really hard time finding practical resources for bike touring. So there were a lot of journals out there which told nice stories about being on the road. But when it really came down to the nitty gritty of, you know, which piece of kit do you get or what happens if you get into this situation in the road, we couldn't find much. So we said, well, we should start writing some of this stuff down. And we just had a really wonderful response from the community every time we put out something that was very practical. And it's built up over time. And now we have this website that's got everything on it, from what kind of bike you need to the gear to some of the emotional things that go on when you're on the road. You know, maybe you get lonely or you run into other challenges. So anything that we can find or think of that we think might have a practical application or help for people who are out there bike touring, we try and put it on the site.
And that's really helpful just because I think we're all about simple living. You know, we talk a lot about bicycling in a lot of its aspects, but just the idea that you can go out and you can have a vacation and spend some time relaxing without having to do a lot of fuel burning. And you can get to places that you might not be able to get to in a car or something like that. You know, just all the way around, it's a lot simpler. But it's only simpler, I suppose, in the respect that you already know kind of how to do that. And if you don't, it's nice to have a website like yours, traveling2.com, that they can fill in some of those holes. So,
you know, we've always said that the hardest part of any bike trip is actually getting out your front door.
Yeah.
Once you've actually gone through the process where you say, okay, I want to do this, I'm going to do this, and then you put all your stuff on the bike and you actually make it up your driveway, then it's easy.
Yeah.
But it's that whole build-up process that most people stop at. They find lots of excuses or reasons or fears why they don't do it, and then they end up never doing it. But
for sure. When I was a kid, my family would take RV camping vacations. It always took us like, you know, a full day just to put things into the vehicle because we never packed before. We never got it all put together. It was just, you know, just like the getting out of town was the hardest part. So, yeah, it's nice. It's nice kind of to feel that freedom once you've done all the preparations. Actually, yeah. Have you heard of the pathlesspedaled.com?
Russ and Laura? I follow their blog, actually. They've got some fantastic posts. I really admire some of their writing.
I saw one when I was reading just this morning that Laura actually slipped and sprained an ankle, I think, or something like that.
It wasn't
a life-threatening injury, but yeah, it was the whole thing where, you know, you put all the plans together and really it was just getting out the door that kind of sent her, I think it was down the stairs and onto her ankle in a bad angle. So tricky, but yeah, anyway, so by the time this goes out on the internet for everybody, I'm sure they will have gotten back on the road, but that was a setback, so.
I'm sure they will have as well, and you know what, they're pros, so.
They are
They're
indeed.
Used to dealing with setbacks, I'm sure, and making the best of it, so last I saw they were having some parties with their friends.
That's right, you know,
Yeah, we had a similar situation, actually. This winter, we almost didn't get out on a bike tour to Spain because we had what Holland considers a lot of snow.
Uh-huh.
Now, you know, in North American terms, it was about an inch, but it paralyzed the country.
That's actually what Portland is like. We have, I think, 2 snowplows for the entire city. So
right. And it's a sizable city, and we just never get snow. So when it does show up, it is a crippling blow
to
the whole
system. We're entirely happy for the day off.
We had a similar situation to them. We weren't injured, but, you know, we ended up having to shorten our bike tour by about 3 days because the flight to Spain was just canceled. But in the end, we had some wonderful experiences. We actually did some winter bike touring around Holland in those 3 days, and it was beautiful. So
yeah, and I'm sorry, some fascinating photos and stories from when you did that. I remember seeing some of the things you put up.
Yeah, it was gorgeous. And when I look back on it, it was an experience that I wouldn't have missed. And that's always what I try and get across to people, because obviously people think sometimes, well, such and such is going to happen to me on the road. And what do I do then? And I always have the attitude, just go with the flow. And
right.
Usually even something that seems negative at first turns out to be a good thing. You know, you might get a flat tire and it might delay you for half an hour while you fix it. But maybe during that half hour, you meet someone really nice and they invite you for supper.
Right.
So you just never know. Sometimes these things that seem bad at first, they actually lead to something really nice down the road.
And something you couldn't have planned no matter how hard you tried.
Yeah, exactly. You just got to be open to serendipity, I think.
Yeah. Well, you've... You've talked a lot about this, so I won't ask you to rehash everything that you've probably put out in other forums on the internet, but maybe just to summarize, you and Andrew took a round-the-world journey, which took, was it 2 years?
3 years.
3 years, yeah. That sounds more reasonable, actually, now that I think about it, especially given all the places and conditions that you rode through. But do you want to tell us a little bit about what that trip was like and maybe some of the impetus, some of the motivation for stepping out and doing it?
I find it so hard to summarize a trip like that in just a few sentences or a few moments. Emotionally, I would say that it was probably the best thing that we've ever done with our lives, because it just totally changed our view on the world, our view on ourselves. It gave us a whole different perspective to life. So it was just a fantastic experience that went way beyond the actual cycling.
Mm-hmm.
The cycling was just sort of the vehicle through which we got there, but
yeah,
we gained much more from it. Than just the biking, although the biking was wonderful as well. And the motivation, I think, came from a number of places. At the time that we started planning the tour, we were living in London in the UK, and we'd been there for about 6 years, and we both had what anyone would consider a good job, you know, with a good salary and security and all the rest of it. But we realized that we were just stuck in this routine, which wasn't really exciting. It wasn't particularly fulfilling. And we just felt that we wanted something more out of life. And possibly part of that came as well from the fact that for both Andrew and I, we watched very close relatives pass away at a very young age.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think we always had that in the back of our heads that, okay, we have these dreams of travel, but we really shouldn't wait until we retire, because you just don't know. You don't know how long you're going to have your health and other situations which may force you to stay put. So we said, hey, you know, we've got a chance, we're young, we're healthy, we've got the money, let's go. And at that point, we weren't cyclists at all. And we didn't know that we wanted to bike around the world, but we just started putting things into Google, like crazy ways to go around the world and adventurous ways to go around the world. Because we knew we didn't want to backpack. That much we knew.
Right. And it's so stereotypical. Everybody does backpacking.
Exactly. We had a lot of friends who did it, and they, not to insult them or anything, you know, they had a wonderful time and their trips were really great for them, but it just wasn't the right trip for us. So yeah, we started putting in these ideas like crazy way to go around the world into Google, and we came up with the website of Alistair Humphreys. I don't know if you know him.
Yeah, I actually haven't read a lot of his stuff, but I've heard his name. I think Bicycle Touring Pro is another website, and we're going to talk to Darren from there a little bit later on, I think. But yeah, he's mentioned Alistair as being a really good a good inspiration and having a lot of good material as well.
Yeah, well, we came up with Alistair's website and saw that there was this guy going around the world on a bike, and we thought, oh, that sounds like fun. Let's try it. So we did.
Right. So you say that you were not cyclists or you just hadn't done bicycle touring?
No, we were not cyclists in any way. We had no Lycra in our closet.
Uh-huh.
We had a couple bicycles, but they were very old. When I look back on it, I don't even think the brakes worked.
Yeah. It's like a lot of people all over.
Yeah, it just wasn't a part of our regular lives, but we heard about bike touring and it sounded like the sort of trip that we wanted to do, where we would actually be in contact with the landscapes and the people along the way. And so we then started doing some day trips and found that we really enjoyed it and just went from there.
Mm-hmm. That's great. One of the things that was really fascinating to me, you went all over. You visited you know, lots of places in Europe. You went through Asia. You made it to New Zealand, and I think I was listening to your podcast on going to New Zealand, and you had talked about taking a cargo ship to get there. How did you happen upon that? Was that one of the Google, like, you know, crazy ways to travel around the world sorts of results, or how did you hear about that?
I can't remember where we actually heard about it the first time, to be honest, but somehow through, you know, a series of web forums and websites, you hear about funny things along the way that kind of stick in your head. And that one stuck with us, because whenever you have a bicycle, flying with it can be kind of a pain. So
and expensive.
By the time we got to Southeast Asia, we were ready to do anything we could to avoid flying with our bicycles. And so we looked up some options. Originally, we were hoping to get to Australia by not flying, but that turns out to be quite complicated because of a few bureaucratic rules. But it turned out that we could actually go from Australia to New Zealand by cargo ship. So we found a ticket agent who sells tickets on cargo ships. You can't just go down to your normal travel agency and buy one. You can't get them online. There are only a handful of people in the world who are licensed to sell cargo ship tickets. And we got in touch with one of them, and he was able to hook us up on the cargo ship, and it was fantastic. It was just so much fun.
Yeah, it takes a bit longer, as I remember hearing. It's not the quickest route to anywhere, right? But it's a unique experience.
Yeah, it's not quick. Between Australia and New Zealand is 5 days, and if you go across the Pacific Ocean from, let's say, New Zealand to North America, San Francisco, you're looking at about 16, 17 days, I think, from memory.
That's quite a bit of time.
It's quite expensive. It's about, last I checked, around $100, $125 a day.
Wow.
You're basically paying for a hotel room every day, plus your room and board.
Right. That's kind of like the Amtrak passenger rail here in America. Just the idea that, yeah, if you want any sort of accommodations, you're going to have to pay out the nose for them. But it is available.
It is. You have to be quite flexible because at the end of the day, these cargo ships are not built to take passengers. They're kind of doing you a favor, really.
Sure.
They're meant to ferry all the stuff that we all buy all around the world. And so if there's a delay with the cargo ship, then you have to hang around port. You don't really have a rough departure date, but it might be the day before. It might be the day after.
Right.
But it's very, very interesting. You're on there with a very multicultural crew. So we had a Romanian captain. And the rest of the crew were from the Philippines. And so every day we had a choice of whether we'd have the Romanian dish that the chef had cooked or the Filipino dish. And they take you all around the ship. You have free access to almost anywhere. You can go up on deck and ask the captain about pirates and stowaways and any other crazy question that comes to your mind.
Yeah. Did you have any pirate episodes while you were out there?
No, we were only there for 5 days. And between Australia and New Zealand, it's pretty safe. So.
Not many pirates there.
No, unfortunately not.
I remember you saying that it's a good idea to have some projects to work on.
Yeah, I think so, because, it depends, of course, on how long a trip you're taking. If you're just going for a month, then you quite relish, I think, a break from your job and your normal routine, and you can quite easily just chill out for a month, no problem at all.
Sure.
But if you're on a much longer trip, I think it's really good to have something to keep you occupied, something that you work towards and gives you a real sense of purpose aside from the bike touring.
Yeah. Well, that's a really fascinating way to travel. I was thinking it sounds a little bit like the worst aspects of public transit, but maybe magnified to where, like, you know, the schedule may not be what you're expecting, and it may take longer to get there than you thought it will. But at the same time, I really enjoy taking public transit because it connects me with such a slice of life that I would not otherwise see. So it sounds like the cargo ship experience is kind of similar to that.
Well, and I think as long as you're prepared for it, you can deal with it and you don't actually mind it. I mean, for me, when I was living in London, I only ever minded public transport when I thought I was going to get home on time and then there was an unexpected delay.
Indeed.
But with a cargo ship, you really know what you're getting into.
Right.
And we had a small delay leaving port, so we were on the ship, I think, for about 12 hours before it actually left Melbourne. But I didn't mind. I mean, we were on this ship, and it's fascinating to sit in one of these docks, which most of us never have access to.
Right.
And see how they move stuff around the world. It's really quite incredible.
Yeah, for sure. That's the sort of thing, like you were saying, that you ordinarily would never get to see. So it's kind of nice. You almost don't mind the delay if you get to learn something new or have an experience that's out of the ordinary.
Exactly. Well, and for a cyclist, for a long distance cyclist, you know, normally we're loaded down with so much gear. And so if you fly, you're guaranteed that you're going to pay excess luggage charges. And the great thing about a cargo ship is you can take as much as you want.
It is a cargo ship.
You can throw the rocks in your bicycle bag and 20 books, and they just lift it all up onto the ship in this giant net and throw it in your room, and it's fantastic.
So
I loved it.
They actually use a net?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's fascinating. That's it. It almost seems like a cartoon or something, but it's actually that's how it's done. How big is
not for everything, obviously, but as a passenger, I just throw your luggage in and hoist it up.
Mm-hmm. Did you get to ride your bike around on the deck at all?
No, unfortunately not. No, we didn't get to ride our bikes around the deck, unfortunately, because of health and safety. And the deck is actually quite narrow and fairly slippery.
Okay.
So riding your bike around it wouldn't be a good idea. We were told in quite serious terms when we got on board that if we fell off that ship, no one would ever see us again.
No. No one is coming to save you.
Slowly around the deck.
Wow. Well, that's
but
good.
We did get to play ping pong with the captain. That was the evening entertainment every night. He was trying to turn us into world-class ping pong players.
I would imagine he probably had plenty of time to develop his skills.
Yeah, well, we had plenty of time to practice. I wouldn't say we developed our skills particularly. It's quite hard on a ship, though, because it's a tiny room, so you haven't got a lot of room to move. And it's rocking, so I'm not great at ping pong at the best of the times, but when the ship's going left, right, it's even worse.
Yeah, it's like playing drunk ping pong, actually.
Right, right. It's kind of a beer pong sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
That's great. I was interested. I know you guys have come up with a couple of really innovative solutions as far as, I believe, were you making tortillas on a camp stove at one point? Maybe I was thinking of bread.
We were making pizza.
Oh, pizza. That's what it was. Yeah. It's been a while since I've seen that. But I remember just thinking, like, this is something I would never be able to cook, you know.
Oh, yes, you would. I'll come show you. It's really easy.
What other maybe creative sorts of solutions did you guys find when you were on the road as far as being able to just kind of create things that gave variety in it, to your experience? What were some other things that maybe you came up with?
Well, you know, we're always really interested in food things. Anything that's edible has got a high priority in our lives. So, we took the basic bread recipe for the pizza and we adapted it. Pizza, but also to cinnamon rolls and garlic bread and every bread thing you can imagine. So we were able to cook bread pretty easily on the road, and that was fantastic. And we picked up all kinds of little things from other cyclists along the way. One fellow, Ray, in San Francisco, he runs another website, biketouringtips.com.
Okay.
He showed us how to take some bubble wrap, insulated bubble wrap that you can get in the hardware store. And I think normally it's for wrapping around pipes to keep them warm, heating pipes or something like that. Uh-huh. But anyway, you can take it and cut it and make it into a little pot cozy for your pot so it keeps your tea hot.
Very nice.
So if you're camping and you make a big cup of tea, then it keeps your tea nice and warm for an hour. Or you can even use it to cook pasta and rice with less gas because you just bring the water up to a boil, throw the pasta in for about 2 minutes instead of the normal 10 minutes cooking time, and then put it in the little pot cozy.
Yeah.
The rest just cooks by sitting in the hot water. Fantastic.
Yeah, and as long as you've got the water to the temperature you want it, you don't need to keep the fuel burning any longer. It'll make it stretch a lot farther, I'm sure. And bubble wrap is also just, it's lightweight. So that's fantastic.
Yeah, I've heard some people even use it as a sleeping mat. Instead of buying a sleeping mat at the camping store, they just put a few sheets of bubble wrap under their sleeping bag. I personally could never do that.
You shift weight and a few of them pop and you wake up.
Like sleeping inside of a UPS truck or something, I suppose. I was curious about, as far as being out on the road, we asked this question, I think, to a lot of touring cyclists that we talk to, but staying connected to people, both people you know back home and fostering a sense of community while you're traveling and so you don't feel all alone, was that difficult for you guys or did it seem to flow pretty naturally into conversations with strangers and making strangers into friends?
I think, there's two aspects to this, isn't there? There's meeting people when you're on the road and there's keeping in touch with the people that you already know and you love, whether they're back home or people you've met along the way. And I think for that part of it, for keeping in touch with your family, it's getting easier and easier all the time.
Right.
Because it always amazed me the places where we would be traveling. You thought you were in the middle of nowhere and then you come across an internet cafe and it'd be full of kids playing Counter-Strike and, you know, on YouTube. And so from the point of view of being able to Skype with your family and friends or send an email, and of course, more and more people are carrying mobile phones. So it's really easy to keep in touch that way now, I think.
Yeah.
And then as far as making connections with people on the road, the wonderful thing about being on a bicycle that's loaded up with bags is that it attracts attention and it makes people curious. And of course, they want to come talk to you. And where are you going? Oh, around the world. Wow, that's fantastic. Tell me more. So it's an instant conversation opener.
Yeah.
And sometimes it can even go – sometimes you're having a bad day or whatever – and you just want to be a little bit alone, but then these people still keep coming up and wanting to talk to you.
So finding,
but most of the time, it was a very good thing.
Yeah, finding people is not necessarily the problem all the time then.
No, I would say everywhere in the world, universally, people were interested in what we were doing. And if we had any sort of a problem, they wanted to help us out. So really universally good experiences around the world.
That's pretty great. I was thinking, you guys just recently had a podcast with Heinz Stucke. Is that how you say his name?
Yeah, Heinz. Yeah, he's a character.
Seriously, I was thinking he's the sort of fellow that I can't remember what he said about what he takes, but he's a distinguished gentleman. He's of an older age than I think a lot of people that tour probably typically are. He didn't grow up with computers and maybe doesn't need them as much, but it seems like he kind of has more the classic experience that you imagine of wandering out into the wilderness and being alone.
I think he's been on the road for so long. What is it, 50 years now, or maybe even 51, 52? I can't remember, but he's been on the road for decades.
Yeah.
I think he quite relishes the experience of being alone, or at least that's my impression.
Right. And he, yeah. I mean, he doesn't have a website or a blog or anything, because a lot of people that do round the world sorts of journeys end up having, you know, like a blog and a way for people to follow them. But he really was like, you had to search really hard to find a phone number where you could get in touch with him, right?
Yeah, that was really a little bit of luck. I emailed a cyclist who he knows in Japan for another reason. And the cyclist in Japan said, hey, here's Heinz's phone number. Why don't you call him?
Yeah.
Okay, I will.
That's fantastic.
And just happened to catch him at home, and he was in a chatty mood. So that was wonderful. But I mean, in some ways you do have to admire, I think, how he travels. He's really just out there having a wonderful experience for himself. He's doing what he wants to do. And he obviously doesn't feel any great need to share it with the world or spend his days in an internet cafe blogging about everything. So,
right. Well, that, thank you so much for sharing that. It's really great to kind of have a perspective on that. So that was good. Well, we should probably wrap up pretty quick, but, it's getting late and you guys will probably want to hit the bed. good luck to you. What do you have coming up in the future? Where do you go from here?
Well, that's a good question. Yeah. I don't know. We have so many dreams, and it's really hard to pick which one you want to do next. That's a really tough decision. But we've got a lot of touring that we want to do here in Europe. There are a lot of corners of Europe we just haven't explored yet. We're really hoping that we might get out to do the Great Divide mountain bike route, maybe next summer.
I've been eyeing that myself. That looks like a fantastic route.
Yeah, there's so many nice places in the world to ride. How do you choose between them all? And then I think if we were going to do another really long trip, we'd either go to South America or maybe to China, because for bureaucratic visa reasons, we didn't get into China on our world trip. So it'd be really wonderful to go back and explore maybe China and Mongolia. Yeah,
that would be really interesting to see.
Well, yeah, it would.
We wish you good luck and best wishes, and we're all behind you no matter where it is that you go next and what you choose to do. So thanks again
for spending
some time with us.
Sorry, I spoke over you there. I was just going to say that if you ever come to Holland, then drop in and say hello. We'd love to host you for a few nights.
Right, and of course, reciprocally, if you ever get to Portland, we'd love to buy you a couple of pints. So
perfect. We'll do that one of these days.
Fantastic. All right, and that was our interview with the traveling2.com featuring Friedel Grant. We do appreciate you joining us, and of course it is the American holiday, the Independence Day on the 4th of July. So if you're in the U.S., we wish you a happy 4th of July and a happy Independence Day. If you're not in the U.S., we wish you an even happier 4th of July, because it'll probably be a little quieter and there won't be nearly as many rockets bursting in air over your home. Well, we do appreciate you taking some time to listen to our podcast. You can find us on the internet at thesprocketpodcast.com. Send us feedback about the program, suggestions for topics, guests, or drinks if you'd like. You can send us an email at thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com, or you can call us or text us at 503-847-9774. Give a big thanks to Ryan J. Lane for providing our theme music. Find him on the internet at myspace.com/RyanJLane. Also, thanks to Hurtbird for our headline sounder, and you can find them at hurtbirdmusic.com. We are, of course, your favorite little podcast here on the internet, and wish you the best. We will see you in a couple weeks when we return with some more live shows. Talk to you soon.